there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. After a long holiday break, we are back. And tonight we are covering Season 5, Episodes 5 and 6, Rewind and Fun and Games. We've got a fun show for you guys tonight, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
We're back. Yay!
To the death.
Well, that escalated quickly. I was about to say Happy New Year.
Aww. Happy New Year to everybody. To the death. I just, that's my favorite phrase of episode 6 is to the death.
Which favorite they, quote for the night. Yes,
they said that that's actually going to be a tattoo. It's going to be
I
on my tombstone.
I think it's the pod name, like instead of Artist Intelligence or like Ghost Rider, to the death.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's not a futuristic name. It's not Adventures in Time. It's to the death. I like that. Well, hey there, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful holiday break, and I hope everybody's having a great new year so far. Let's not waste any time getting down to talk about both of these episodes. We got a double feature for you guys tonight. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Taran.
Taran, to the death. I am Taran all across the board. I speak like this only from now on.
And to his left, Zach Wilson.
Hey, guys. I'm Zach Wilson. You can find me all over the internet at that Zach Wilson. To the death.
And sadly, Jesse Klein could not be here with
because he lost his death match earlier today.
I apologized. That being said, you guys can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at JessKlein1. And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me directly at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. Be sure to follow along with the hashtag ABTVMarvel for you guys on Twitter. And Zach has got you all covered in the live chat on YouTube. So if you guys have anything fun to say, I'm sure you do, because both of these episodes were really fun.
They are.
Before we get the ball rolling on this episode, we decided we were going to wait on that. So we will talk about that when we get to the break.
You made it sound so ominous.
We'll talk about that later.
To the death.
The
live chat is only live until it's to the death.
Those of you in the live chat, all of you, fight to the death.
Fight to the death. It's just because they constantly...
Okay. Do it for our amusement.
I'm sure we'll go have some fun. That's why I love this. They would be like, are they going to fight to the death? Someone would say, yes, they will fight to the death. And then what will happen to me when I fight?
It's to the death.
Well, we got to jump back and talk. We got to rewind.
We got to rewind. Rewind it back.
See what I did there?
We did. So we do. Episode 5, which a lot of you guys have been definitely clamoring for us on Twitter to be talking about this episode. Believe me, if holiday scheduling had worked out a little bit better, we would be talking about this episode on its own, because this one was a lot of fun for me personally. Episode 5, Rewind, goes back in time, and we're back on Earth. And I wanted to get your guys' initial thoughts on this episode, because one of the, I suppose, critiques of the current season that we had in the first couple episodes is that it didn't feel like a spy show, that a lot of our long-term veteran spies aren't really acting like spies. So I wanted to know, what did you guys think going back and getting back into a little bit of spy shenanigans?
Well, I'm glad you had a good time, because Rusty didn't. Because
That's your main takeaway from the episode?
They glossed over Rusty died, and everyone's like, oh, there goes Rusty. Let's use his stuff. And then Rusty's boyed. Like, everyone just... We got over Rusty? I don't feel like one talked about Rusty.
How dare you make the assumption that I got over Rusty?
You were so over Rusty.
How dare you?
You were so over Rusty. And also, when you say it went back to the spy shenanigans, I feel like it was, sure, it was very spy shenanigan-y, but it was a lot more Pink Panther than it was Mission Impossible. It was a fun, lighthearted episode, and I felt that it was more like a reintroduction to Fitz instead of, like, hey, Fitz is still here. I don't know why we're keeping him separate from everyone else, but still here. We had to tape this, like, on his off time and get this done, so now we can reintroduce him.
Man had a movie to film.
Exactly.
I mean, it was a good episode. This did feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like, of old. Like, it was on Earth.
It's grounded, but it still had that weird sci-fi twisty turning, like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, there were still aliens, Enoch, there were still Inhumans.
It was fun, and I love that we got Hunter back.
Oh my gosh, I've missed Lance him so Hunter. Much.
We at least got him back. We couldn't get Bobby. She's off in a different part of space. On another show. But it was a
good
episode.
Did you just check in with Bobby?
My wrist. Bobby's up. Look, I have a fancy spy watch, and somebody was trying to send me notes.
Not going to lie.
I thought it might have been Jesse from the other side of death.
Sending you messages from beyond the grave. I'm not going to lie. When I was a kid, I thought like wrist communicators were the coolest thing. So now that there are watches that can send text messages,
they are the coolest things.
They are pretty cool. But yeah, for me, I liked this as a return to form and also very much as a character spotlight for Fitz, because one of the things, you know, again, he was isolated from the group at the beginning of the season, and being isolated from everybody right after the fallout of BTW, you were kind of a Nazi dictator for a little bit there.
Let's have a little more respect for Fritz. Thank you.
We'll talk about Fritz a little bit here, because we see Fritz kind of come back in full force over the course of both of these episodes.
He still remembers everything.
Yeah.
But from both, like, all the tactical training, clearly, he's just like, I got this. I'm going to take out, like, 8 dudes with a single gun.
A couple times he did something like that. Like, he did it first with Enoch, and then we see him do it again with the soldiers who come for them when they're on the base, and then we see him do it again later in episode 6.
Like, it was with Enoch that it was just like, oh damn it, that's that person is still in there,
because
that was like, you're keeping me from what I want, I'm gonna threaten your life, which we
so
never would have
see
seen
him
before
again. I was so happy. Listen, Fritz is my favorite character on the show. Okay, even
Evil
more
Fitz.
So than Cassius. And not only is Fritz just amazing, the beard, did no one else like the beard when he had the beard? Okay.
I mean, he was rocking the look.
I say that to you, Fritz.
So, let's talk about the reunion with Hunter a little bit, because I feel like there's no better way to get reintroduced to this character than with a botched escape plan. Fitz has it all planned out that, like, okay, you as my lawyer are going to come in
three times a week for 3 months, and then I'll have everything I need.
I'll have everything I need, and we will carefully and methodically plot this out. And about 2 seconds later, an explosion goes off, and they have to run. And that's when we see poor Rusty crash the helicopter.
For no reason, too, by the way. He literally just crashed. Best pilot money can buy. My money can buy. It was funny. It was funny. No, I mean, Rusty. Rest in peace.
I do have a significant portion of the board over there with my notes on it that just says R.I.P. Rusty. If we want to take a moment of silence to honor our fallen comrade.
I don't know if you could really call it Hunter's botched rescue, though, because it was successful.
It definitely worked.
It was supposed to be a diversion tactic. It definitely was enough of a diversion.
Yep. Helicopter crash. And
I'm glad you guys are laughing. You know who's not laughing? Rusty.
I don't know. That was his death was delivered with impeccable comedic timing. I think he's laughing.
He's laughing. Or we don't actually know if Rusty was in the helicopter, to be honest. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, he could have. He absolutely could have put it on autopilot, set it to crash, and then started life anew as not Rusty, as, I don't know, Raymond or Ramon or Romeo. You never know.
Look, when Rusty and the helicopter had to fight to the death,
the
Rusty lost.
Technically, it was a draw, since I don't think the helicopter's walking away either.
In this escape, Lance comes back, and it's not a very well-thought-out, planned escape, which is Lance's MO, right? This was very Lance. Was the episode more about Lance or more about Fitz? And I'll say this because I felt that I had more insight into Lance's personality and only into Fitz's love for Gemma. But not like I got the glimpse of, hey, he's back to framework Fritz a little, and they talk about that briefly where he says, I this is a part of me, it's still inside me. Almost as if he can't live with it. And then, of course, Lance says the Terron thing is like, I actually like seeing that part of you. That was the best part of you. I actually like you a little more. But I feel like it was a Lance-driven episode.
For me, and let me know if you feel differently, Zach, I feel like in true buddy cop fashion or like any sort of buddy comedy, I feel like it was about both of them pretty equally. Because we have Fitz there sort of driving the plot with his quest to figure out what happened to everybody and to then get reunited with them, and Lance being along for the ride, providing a lot of the comedic relief. So I feel like it was about both of them.
Yeah, and we did get those little like pieces of information about like what Hunter's been up to. Like I'm glad they addressed it quickly and didn't like let us stew and like where is Bobby? And the fact that they've decided that they're still going to be together, but they're just going to be like off on their own missions.
Like, oh, we are 100% together, 50% of the time. It works out better. And then of course Fitz specifically realizes quickly that the problem. The same thing that's saving Bobby and Hunter's relationship is the thing that's destroying Gemma and Fitz is distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's long distance and just being torn apart. And it does seem like the universe does not want them together at every turn. Because every time they have a moment of solace, something happens that rips them apart from one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
like ninjas.
Not Hunter. Well, I mean, that happens to the best of us.
That was apparently the last thing that before they separated the last time was they got attacked by ninjas. Was it the hand? I don't know. Maybe.
Ooh.
I'd love to think that as like the Defenders is going on, like in the sewers, like during the climax of that season, that up in the streets of Manhattan, yeah, Bobby and Hunter are just fighting ninjas.
They're like, where did these? They have no context for this. No. Either. Like, where the hell did these ninjas come from?
Have you guys never been broken up by ninjas? You guys are talking like this is not out of the ordinary.
Truth be told, several relationships of mine have fallen, you know, to the wayside due to ninja attack. It just brings out the worst in both me and my partners.
For
it's sad.
Sharing your personal stories on our show. And I appreciate that.
If we can't be honest here, where can we be honest?
Exactly. And then, but when it comes to honesty, Fitz was actually very honest, and that was exciting because he confided. You could tell how good of friends they are because they confided in one another. And you brought up a good point when you said buddy cop, because I didn't even see it in that light until you said it. I'm like, oh, wow, it is a buddy cop situation where it's like it's like Rush Hour or whatever buddy cop movie you think of, right? The Will Smith, what's the Will Smith Martin one?
Bad Boys?
Bad Boys, where it's like one cop is like straight guy, and then I just like that perspective. It's a good perspective.
They're buddy cops if the cops were criminals in this particular case. I do want to point out, it's not a huge component of the episode, but I do want to point out how bad I feel for Lieutenant Evans and Lieutenant Lucas. Because they spend the entire, you know, they track down people who cannot be found because of straight up sci-fi magic and time travel. And the one person they can apprehend, they spend months trying to acquiesce to his request. And then he and Hunter break out. They spend the rest of the episode trying to track them down, and then they get shot in the head for their efforts.
Yeah, what was that?
That was so what freaking dark.
Who's running this base?
Apparently some chick named General Hale. And
Hydra.
She...
Clearly it's Hydra.
That General is entirely
Hale?
Possible.
Hale Hydra?
I mean, I think it's... Interesting. Okay.
I will be so mad if she turns out to be Hydra just so that they can make that pun.
I mean, they're clearly setting her up to be when the big bad once we get back from...
Like Talbot, if Talbot was evil.
Yeah. If he wasn't just like a military guy trying to like...
Like, you kids, get off my lawn.
It's just a question of like what organization or... entity is she from? Because like she's clearly not just on the government side. She's not just like a rogue government agent. She killed two people just because they didn't do a good job. Maybe they should have been
you
fired.
You have so much more faith in the government. And it's interesting. So the concept is, I feel like, I don't know why no one would think she works for Hydra. I don't know why that's like...
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not like I don't think that there are people in the government doing bad things on behalf of other organizations. I'm just saying she's not... It, like, Talbot was like, he was just the military. Like, he represented the military, and he had the military's and the country's best interests, which conflicted with...
It's his indoctrination of...
Yeah, but this person is like clearly from an outside group and is not even thinking about the government or the country.
Maybe.
Just like, I'm going to kill some people. To the death.
It's
to the death, I'm telling
you. She could very well be Hydra because we... But for right now, I think that's too much of an easy answer because we've already seen many iterations of Hydra over the course of this series. I feel like it's a little too soon to bring back Hydra right after all of the Hydra stuff that was in the framework. So I feel like she's probably from a different group. Maybe they're setting things up for when everybody gets back to Earth and it's this sort of antagonistic group that we're going to have to deal with.
Aim.
Maybe.
Or like as Trend Pimp 1 in the chat beat me to the same theory. An LMD, oh, I don't know if she's an LMD, but working for the superior who last time we talked might be MODOK. So is it AIM and MODOK?
I would love for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. producers to come out and be like, hey guys, just thank you so much for watching the show. And special message to Zach, we were not having MODOK. I just want to let you know, Zach, we're not having MODOK.
Were the ones that had characters say, an organism designed... only for killing. They said it on the show.
They said
it just to mess with us, guys.
We never had any intention of using MODOK or Graviton. What?
I mean, they're building towards, like, they've said...
That's the biggest twist of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. of all time.
It was a MacGuffin.
We're like 5 episodes away from episode 100, which they said is going to have some kind of big, crazy thing in it. Some big set piece that if we're expecting some... thing that's gonna like surprise us and bring back stuff from the past, like we would be satisfied. That's what they've said. They also said that we would be satisfied with the Graviton thread last year. So I don't necessarily trust you, producers.
It's entirely possible that Daisy, and we'll talk about it a little bit more, maybe this is better for predictions, but it's entirely possible that Daisy isn't the destroyer of worlds. Somebody brought up, I think in our comments a couple weeks ago, that Graviton could have been the destroyer of worlds.
I have an even crazier theory on destroyer of worlds.
I don't know how Daisy could be the destroyer of worlds. She's in the future. So unless she goes back in time at some point, destroys the world, and then fast forwards or something of that nature, she's already gone. She's out of this time loop. So how can she go back and destroy the world?
This is where we get into a lot of problems with wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff, guys. You start dealing with paradoxes, because if she doesn't manage to leave the future to go back to the past, she can't be the one to destroy the world. And if she didn't destroy the world, then who knows? It starts to make your head spin.
I think we're in, we're definitely in our universe though, because Fitz didn't travel. So I was about to throw, like, they introduced the whole multiverse concept that like clearly is not part of the equation in this. So like this is our future.
Unless you're going with did you ever read the book Timeline by any chance, guys, by Michael Crichton? It was multiverse, but like when you did time travel, like that was all multiverse stuff, but when somebody came back into your timeline, it was the people from a different universe, and I did not like that book.
but what I'm saying is,
I'm already confused enough.
Fitz didn't do any time travel. He just was asleep.
He just waited.
So it's definitely the same universe. So like they have to go back and fix it. Otherwise, let me put it this way. They have to fix it before episode 100, because that's when Black Panther comes out, and we all know that the world's not destroyed for Black Panther to take place.
So is Enoch a watcher, or is he Lucifer?
That's an excellent question. We still don't really know. We got a backstory for him, but I feel like that doesn't really illuminate who or what he is very well.
The race that he says he comes from is not, to my knowledge, anything from the comics, but he basically seems like a facsimile for the Watcher. Like, he seems like even the name is like Uatu, Enoch, like those could have been the same people, but they've already shown the Watchers in the movie, so they couldn't use the Watcher. So it sounds like they came up with like a facsimile called the Chromacons.
Mm-hmm. Which I like that he referred to himself as an anthropologist. He's like, that's what you would probably
call
me. It's
exactly the Watcher, except he doesn't live on the moon.
Because
we're not going to the moon. Like, the moon is off limits from now on because of Inhumans. Like, it's just tainted.
I mean, you said it,
me. You're not allowed to go to the moon because then you'd have to answer a bunch of questions that nobody wants to talk about.
Nobody wants to talk about that. I will say that given that Enoch is passing for human, like, his disguise is so foolproof that you can't tell. Like, that's how good his little human suit is, that I have a hard time looking at somebody like General Hale and not going, are you an alien in disguise? You could be an alien in disguise. Although I have no idea what her agenda would be if that were the case.
Enoch's character reminds me of the guy from The Matrix.
Agent Smith?
Agent Smith. I'm horrible with names. The only name that you I know is Daisy.
I get it. I get it. I find the character interesting, at least so far. They're gonna have to, if they're gonna keep him around, they're gonna have to introduce something else to him, because he's pretty one note.
Well, they're gonna keep him around, as we saw in the conclusion of episode 6. So something happens with him. But even in episode 5, clearly he plays a big part, and he stays with Fitz. Like, he's making sure that this happens. And we haven't even spoke about Robin
and everything yet. Because the whole reason he decided to get involved in the first place, because as somebody who is only meant to observe humanity, he really shouldn't be getting involved. But he's allowed to when there's a cataclysmic event on the horizon.
Extinction-level event.
No prime directive for them. Their prime directive is gone.
Well, but I think the prime directive has basically for extinction-level events.
You're like, supposed to allow it to happen. In fact, Captain Kirk and Jean-Luc Picard both get in so much trouble for that. I can geek out, too. What?
It's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. So, but that was basically his version of these rules are, like, you're allowed to step in if all of the human race is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Which they basically are.
Yeah, as soon as Cassius gets to take off, then, yeah, you know he's going to burn that space station to the ground and be like, whatever. And, like, peace out, everybody. So that's the end of humanity,
you think
basically.
That's what, after watching Cassius grow as a character, I just need to understand. Do you think that what he would say, Cassius' character, who speaks so eloquently at all times, who's so witty and charming, and in just such a dark manner, would be like, peace out, everybody! And
peace out, bitches!
Okay. I just wanted to make sure and affirm that that is how we feel that Cassius should speak at that
obviously,
moment.
Obviously, it would sound a lot better coming out of Dominic than it does me. He's the professional.
Just flipped the bird out the window of his spaceship as he flies away.
But yeah, let's talk about Robin a little bit. Robin Hinton is an Inhuman I personally never thought we were going to see again. I really like that they brought back the sort of, because her dad Charles, it was a very what was the Stephen King movie? Dead Zone. No, I think it was Dead Zone, yeah, where a guy touches somebody and then he sees, like, how they die, or he sees some sort of cataclysmic event. And that's basically the power that her dad had, is every time he made physical contact with somebody, he saw someone's death.
Christine.
No, okay. We're not guessing Stephen King titles anymore. Although, keep going. Which one's your favorite?
I don't know. We don't have time for this.
I think those might be the only two I know. When they brought it back again.
It too. Yeah. Electric Boogaloo. But no, I really, because I thought that after they killed him off and Daisy, you know, set aside the money for his family and then took off, I thought that was sort of the end we were going to be seeing from them. But no, she somehow went through Terrigenesis and got her father's sort of clairvoyant powers.
But even more. And isn't she somehow related to Homeboy who was kind of helping them, but, like, not?
Enoch?
No, the guy from before. Okay, so she gets the postcard, right? So isn't she Homeboy's mom?
Probably not mom, but yeah, definitely probably like great grandma or something.
Why, like grandma? It's only nine. It's only
yeah, because like we're in the year 2091.
Exactly. So she's so
yeah, probably grandma.
Child then raises grandson like this is what's gonna happen. This is what's gonna happen. Special connection, which is what his special connection to the whole prophecy is.
Which it's interesting that they put it like that, because yeah, they were talking about like in the future it's referred to as a prophecy, like, oh, it's prophesized that these people will come and help us, and it makes sense that you have somebody who can see the future so that there's a prophecy to begin with. It makes a lot of sense. So I have to tip my hat. It's like, oh, way to make that come full circle.
And also it would make sense who was on the ground and had foreknowledge of what was going to happen. Is that grandma was feeding the information and setting it all up as part of this plan, even though she doesn't talk a lot now. We don't know what happens later. And she just sets it up.
What I really liked about this storyline is the way they talked about like what the power has done to her. And I like that they're going into, they're not just like, oh, she's a little girl and she draws prophecies and then we're moving on. It's like, no, this is a little girl who can do these amazing things, but it has destroyed her ability to have a normal life. She can't communicate. She's basically become autistic with this ability just added in. She's not talking to anyone. She only communicates through these pictures.
This is a little girl who has seen the end of the world. And that in and of itself is, I imagine, is very traumatic. And it's so sad because all Daisy wanted to do before she kind of went rogue was to set up her and her mom to have a good life. And even though they're taken care of financially, like, yeah, she can never have a normal life.
She doesn't experience time in a linear manner like most of us. We sit and have it starts and it goes and then it ends, whatever. She sees everything simultaneously, almost as if it's the same. And the mom was like, sometimes she doesn't even recognize that I'm her mother, which is obviously horrible for this child. And you would think that a child who's able to see the future and just know so much would be a better artist. And she just was not. Like, seriously, you're not four. Like, you were like nine. Like, you, I'm, anyway.
I like that they approached it as though it was a tragic thing, and they didn't kind of go into like the horror movie cliche of like, oh no, the little girl is drawing scary, creepy pictures. They didn't treat it that way. It was a plot device, but they didn't treat it in like I said, I love my scary movies, but man, is that an overused, tired trope?
Yeah,
that I'm not a fan of.
But anyway, back to Fitz and his mission to get to the future.
I mean, yeah, but there was a lot more in this episode that I think is going to be set up later. Like the alien language. What language is that?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't place it. It's not Kree. It's not like inhuman.
Exactly. And it was also later in other things, too. So it was like that alien language. I saw it in some of those boxes that were in that basement. And so what is that language? What does it pertain to? What were those writings? Why do you have pieces of paper all over his wall?
Yeah.
What is he trying to decipher?
I feel like it's a fair estimation that maybe Enoch isn't involved in all of this just to save the human race. It might be that there's some or maybe even multiple ulterior motives at work. I need to save the human race so that someone else can come in and enslave them in a few millennia or something along those lines.
He says it's an ancient language, so it sort of, to me, sounds like it's the language of the Chromacons, like his people, which...
If there are Chromacons, we're going on the assumption that Enoch is telling the truth. I mean, for all we know, there is no such thing as a Chromacon. How do we know Chromacons?
Yeah, he could straight up be the devil.
It's just the concept is we know very little about Enoch, and we're taking everything he's saying at face value, including his agenda. Which, does he stay with Fitz the entire of the 74 years on the ship? Which he can't, because he sets up Fitz's like alias and his alter ego, and he's also very knowledgeable about everything that's going on in the world. So does he just show up when the alarm is about to go off? Like, because he kind of says like, "Oh, I'm gonna be there," but he really just couldn't have been there.
He was very busy during those 70 odd years.
74 years. Yeah.
I'm gonna throw this out again. that
he's MODOK. No,
no. But there's this weird character called Ex Nihilo from it was from an Avengers story a couple years ago that he like goes and like he basically raises planets, like not like like he's from a people like a gardener, like he like helps planets come into life. And I think that could be a really random and really cool thing for them to do. Like, this is the guy who like basically was. He kickstarted
American.
He kickstarted everything that led to today. He kicked like human life on this planet.
I like that. The idea so that he like cultivated everything.
Like sort of like the monolith in 2001. Like he shows up and is like, there's life here, but I'm gonna tweak it in a direction.
I'm gonna tweak it a little bit and boom, now there's humans.
Well, that's nice because Ex Nihilo looks like the devil.
He's a big yellow guy with some horns, and he has an omega on his chest.
Okay.
I would like to, when we have time later on, I'm definitely, when the show is done, I'm definitely going to go back to episode one from this season and, like, freeze frame on, like, that brief silhouette we got from him when he took off his human suit, because he definitely looked like he had horns, if I recall correctly. So I don't know what this guy is, and it's driving me crazy.
In the first episode of this season, he took
off the human suit to hop into the shower, and he had this weird, very not human silhouette. Maybe he had horns, maybe he didn't. I don't know. It was a weird angle. That's why I'm saying I want to go back and look at that silhouette because I do not trust this guy.
You want to hear the other craziest theory that I heard? And I'm not saying I believe this because there's a whole, but like, I was just like, I have to give it some credence.
We love our crazy theories here.
That he's actually the Silver Surfer.
Okay.
And Destroyer of Worlds is actually Galactus showing up and taking a big ass bite out of the planet.
I don't think we can do that copyright wise. Although Disney is about to
even without the Fox deal, technically,
did the rights go back?
No, technically they only ever owned the movie rights, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is television.
Snap!
Still not possible.
The chat's Michael Kuros is like, come on, Zach.
People are offended.
It's not even my theory, but it was so crazy I had to repeat it.
Come on. Yeah, we love just throwing stuff out there, and then when something really random does happen, we can go, yeah, we knew it. We all called
it. If we throw enough theories out there, we can take a clip out of the show and be like, we were right.
If you throw enough spaghetti at the wall, eventually something's going to stick.
So Robin being Homeboy's grandma, totally invisible, right? Unfeasible. No.
You pointed it out.
Silver Surfer in a human suit who waited around, been there for 30,000 years, and then Galactica is going to come and destroy the world?
I mean, Galactus always sends a herald to tell of his coming.
That's very true.
And he is bald. I don't know anymore.
Whoever this guy is, he does have this almost robotic, very alien cadence to him, where it's such a weird like way of talking that like he doesn't really understand. It's like he doesn't understand the people around him, even though he's been watching us for our entire existence. 30,000
years. Yeah,
I just love the idea of Galactus coming in, taking a bite of the Earth, and somehow pinning it on Daisy. It wasn't me. It was that girl. She did it.
Well, she was trying to fight Galactus. She's like, I'll get you. Oh, no, the planet's gone.
Oh, shoot. This is the opposite of what I wanted. Oh, man, not my day. So, I love that, like, we have that little moment with the postcard, because that's how it ends up in the future. And that's why this guy was so dead set on, like, oh, you know, I believed when nobody else did. The elders, you know, prophesied that this would happen. It's what, like I said, it's one of those things that makes sense and comes full circle. So kudos, writers. I really liked that. Talking about the way that Fitz ends up getting to the future, they have to steal a cryosleep little chamber from the place where Fitz initially broke out of. So they have to break back in to pull off this heist.
It was the cryo chamber that Enoch came to Earth on.
Yeah, yeah. An alien cryo chamber that's being kept in not Area 51. So that is weird to think, because it was one of the things that Hunter said about the facility was that it's one of those places that isn't supposed to exist. So we have a facility that's, you know, post Shield, that is apprehended Fitz, that also has alien tech. That's interesting to think about.
And
maybe
has like enough of, well, it seems like they've sort of taken over some amount of like Shield's old like
assets
and resources. Like there's what appeared to be a USS, not USSR, the SSR. Definitely different organization. Different. If the U is in there. An SSR crate, because it had the old
Peggy Carter's style logo. Yeah, Peggy Carter's old organization. So,
and they had the bus 2.0, yeah.
Which was awesome to get to see that again. So we get this fun break in, and then they steal the cryopod and take off. And yeah, I miss like seeing Quinjets and things like that. So that was a fun.
I would still love to know what Fitz wrote in those letters to the soccer team, to the magazine, that got Lance's attention in the first place. I would love to know what, because we heard kind of Lance, just, it was random.
Their reunion was beautiful. Like, it they was. Were screaming at each other over soccer.
Where do you get off saying that about Liverpool?
I missed you. You too. Oh, it was beautiful. And speaking of, they also, when they have to part ways, another beautiful moment of bromance between the two of them. The last thing Fitz does before he sleeps for 74 years is make a Star Wars reference, and that made me very happy.
I feel like, okay. Fitz maybe should have asked Robin a couple more questions. I just feel like he went into all of this really ill-informed.
Very cavalier.
Especially when Lance is like, you do realize that the source is right there. Like, you can just ask her why you weren't taken. And then he just asked, like, he literally asked her 5 questions. And they weren't even that good a question. Like, hey, what am I supposed to do? What's going to happen? Why don't you write some of this stuff down? You know, as you get older, maybe write something, mail it to Enoch. Enoch will get it.
Play Pictionary with her.
Something. Just very limited amount of questions. And he went into this, which is a different way, is because the new Fitz is kind of half-cocked and action-driven, when the old Fitz was very thoughtful and would, like, need so much more information. Secondly, it also made me realize I have never loved anyone ever in my life, because he does this, more importantly than the world saving the world, is really he does it for Gemma. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I love Gemma. I need Gemma, 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 Gemma. And then he Gemma's it in a, I would have done none of this. Like, I would have been like, ah.
Not even to save the world, Taron?
Eh.
Meh. Eh. You know you live on the world, right?
Sure. You know? You know, I sometimes I think to myself, it's just cheaper to die than pay bills. Like, it becomes, it's like, yeah. I save the world. I'm not going to go out of my way to destroy it, but would I save the world?
I would.
My school debt?
If the world gets destroyed in the next couple of weeks, I don't have to pay back my student loans.
That's
so.
What I'm saying. Student loans. That's not
They
crazy.
Are the worst.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that just about wraps it up for the episode. Rewind.
Did
we
I go too far?
No.
To the death.
We have another episode to talk about. Do we have any final thoughts on seeing Lance again and this fun espionage return to form?
No, I mean, it was all cool. I'm excited to talk about the next episode.
I didn't realize how much I missed Lance until we saw him again.
Yeah.
It was delightful to have him back. So really quickly, before we get into the next episode, I wanted to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you. It is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like it when we talk about Marvel-oriented content. So please, if you haven't already done so, go rate, subscribe, and leave a comment, because we love hearing from you. And we have an announcement that we need to make about the upcoming show, Black Lightning. On January 16th, when the CW's newest superhero suits up, Lightning's gonna strike. Don't miss the electrifying new series, Black Lightning. Black Lightning, aka Jefferson Pierce, has previously powered down his crime-fighting career for the last 9 years and has been saving lives the best way he knows how. as the principal of a local high school. But in this city, when the hero's away, the gangs will play. Hmm. And the dude's a family man, so when people get caught in the crosshairs, it's time to take charge. Now the former hero is back in full force for a second round against corruption and violence, because lightning does strike twice. It's dark days for the city of Freeland, but the storm is coming when Black Lightning brings his power to the people. Not only will the series Black Lightning spark you up, but also the soundtrack is full of slamming hip-hop cuts from... excuse me. Cuts like songs from Rome Fortune and old school hits from blues singer Nina Simone, Bobby Bland, and the great Isaac Hayes. That on January 16th, the world will know Black Lightning, series premiere after The Flash, only on the CW.
It's lit!
I do appreciate the posters that are around town. I know a lot of our CW crew, after show people here, will probably have a lot to say on that one.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'll be covering Black Lightning as soon as it's as it hits the airwaves.
Yeah.
we're more Marvel people here at this table, but I'm really excited. I've seen a lot of people who are excited for this particular show, so I'm sure it's going to be great.
It's going to do extremely well. It's going to be a very popular show, I think.
Well, let's get back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Again, like I said, we're Marvel people here. We love our CW shows as well. Anywho, so let's get into fun and games. So, we start this episode off with Flint. You called it, Zach, man. You were absolutely right.
Oh,
Flint
yeah.
was exactly no, who we
it
said
wasn't
he was.
As much a theory as just like, I see what this character you've introduced, since he looks identical to the comic book character and has the same name. And you're talking about Inhumans all the time. But it was cool. I liked the way that they did the, Earth romancy. I don't even know what to call his power.
He's an earthbender.
Yeah, earthbender.
I don't think that's going to mean anything to Tehran, but yeah, he's an earthbender.
I know what an earthbender is.
Dude.
Okay, it's like an airbender except with the earth.
You know what an airbender
okay?
is.
And I know what a earth necromancer is as well. So don't don't discredit my knowledge of sci-fi.
I will never discredit your knowledge of nerdy stuff ever again, Tehran. My apologies.
Thank you. I'm just saying.
But yeah, I really liked this plot line with him going through Terra Genesis and discovering his power, which again, it shows that Cassius really is getting ready to burn the place to the ground, because he's like, okay, yeah, everybody who hasn't gone through Terra Genesis yet, let's go through Terra Genesis so we can sell you all off and then I can burn this place walking away with as much money as possible.
I don't know if he's going to burn the place to the ground the same way, because he has all these kids doing this. I mean, he has like the best buyers all at the same time, so maybe he just wants to maximize his profit and show off a little. Also, full disclosure, I only know what Airbender is because of M. Night Shyamalan. I just want to throw it out there. So
that's
all
unfortunate.
Right, moving on. But I think he does want.
I thought this was a safe place, guys.
Okay. What gave you that impression?
When we listened to Megan's ninja breakup stories, we were all there for you.
That's true. Okay? That's true. This is supposed to be a judgment-free zone.
I think Cassius does want to cut and run, though, because he's talking about like if he can get enough from the destroyer from Daisy that he thinks his dad's going to accept him. He's like,
Daddy will love me again.
Yeah, I made so much money, Daddy.
But why would he leave? Why would he destroy what's already established? Maybe he'll just let it be.
I think he'd probably just leave it to like
to
basically
its own demise.
To die, because like I don't know what kind of outside resources they're bringing in that might be needed to sustain that place. But he's definitely not sending.
I mean,
anything.
You
know,
he gets killed. So.
You know what would be a baller move? For him to get all this money and success and fortune from, you know, selling off the Great Destroyer, getting his father to admit, you have my respect now, son, and then being like, thanks, Dad. By the way, boom, and then his Earth project detonates, and he's like, that's what I think of you, and
yeah, but I
your
don't think
Earth...
they respect Earth, because when the brother, Fallneck, or whatever his name is...
Fallnock.
Yeah, whatever. Fallneck, Fallnock. Okay, Fallnock. Calm down, people. So then he comes, and he's like, this is clearly a cesspool. This is clearly a punishment, like we had already predicted.
Yeah, we had sort of...
Yeah, this is a punishment. He doesn't want to be there. This is disgusting. Humans are filled. So I don't know if the Kree would actually even blink if the humans were destroyed. I do want to know what they thought the race of Fitz's character, the Marauder guy, and the other guy, who both were just humans.
I mean,
the guy that Patrick Fabian was playing, The older guy?
Yeah, the older guy. Just say old white guy. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I recognize him from Better Call Saul. He's a fun actor. There are other alien races that basically appear humans. Like in Guardians of the Galaxy, you meet the Xandarians, for all intents and purposes, look human.
And I think the implication was that this guy was from Xandar, since he brought a Xandarian delicacy to the table. So I think that was the implication.
He seems Xandar, but Fitz just looked like a human. Kind of was like a mean human, I guess. Like he's just a...
Well, I mean, as we see from Guardians of the Galaxy, people call people from Earth Terrans. So, like, I guess that, like, people are like, oh, you're from Earth? Okay, you're from Terran. And so I guess it's not unheard of for humans to be running around, or for bare minimum for people who look like humans to be running around in the galaxy.
Yeah, there probably are just like several races that just like look enough like they're human. Like you had Sean Gunn in Guardians of the Galaxy, which we don't know where the hell he's from. They all look basically human.
Okay.
Yeah.
Enough that we just are supposed to, I think, accept it and move on.
Or as we've seen from this guy, from Enoch, maybe... just your normal alien appearance isn't proper in polite company. And so people just sort of like, hey, I'll just look human at this dinner table.
Renji has a question for us from the chat. Would you eat the snail?
Probably not. Wait, how does it smell when they bring it like out? Because if it smells like garlic and like, I don't know, sauteed, I don't know, seafood, people eat maybe. Snail.
Yeah, I've had escargot. It's delicious.
Okay.
Usually because it's just like drenched in butter, but still tastes good.
I feel like I probably wouldn't just based on its look, but if it smelled pretty good, maybe.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be.
Great. I'll have more for me.
More Xandarian delicacies for Zach. See, Zach is going to last a lot longer when the universe, you know, when we start our universe traveling. He's going to last a lot longer.
Will I, though? Because I'm like, yeah, bring on the weird alien food. It's only a matter of time before one of them turns out to be poisonous to humans.
Or will you want to? I've always thought about that when I watch these end of the world zombie attack. Like, I don't know if I'd want to live this way, you know? It's not even that serious.
You're like, this has been fun. Good game, everyone.
To the death.
But I wanted to ask you guys, kind of getting back to Flint's side of things, I wanted to ask you, because he has this moment with Tess right before he goes through Terra Genesis, and it doesn't take long before she gets killed off because they suspect she had something to do with his disappearance. Do we feel like her storyline was cut short? Like, this was something that was left on the cutting room floor? Because she was essentially fridged. Like, they were setting her up to be not necessarily a big character, but they set her up to be a compassionate character helping our heroes, and then they killed her off without a second thought.
It was really sudden.
It felt very sudden.
It felt odd how sudden her, like, because we'd spent so much time with her, it did feel a little bit...
Didn't feel sudden with the foreshadowing that went on. She should have never hugged Flint. She lives in this world. She's not time traveler lady. She's there. She knows how they react.
She lives it every day.
She knows how they react. They obviously don't like compassion or empathy or any of these things. And a life earned and a life owed and a kill this and to the death. So she should have just let it happen. It was going to happen regardless. And she's the one where it's like, she even brings up, oh, this is happening. Or
I don't mean that it was unreasonable that, like, you're right. She put herself in that scenario. Like, I think it makes sense that she would wind up getting herself killed. I just meant in the way the show flowed, it was just, like, they, like, just sort of happened upon her, and we just were, like, it wasn't like we saw a shot.
It was unsatisfying because I really wanted her to find out what the guy, I forget this guy's name, the guy who I think Robin's the grandmother, her connection to him.
It wasn't like we built up to this, or even if we like got a dramatic moment where we saw that somebody was hanging and then we revealed it was Tess. It was just, we just like wide shot, like boom
smash guy,
hide for a second, and then like let's keep going.
Like they were in the middle of a conversation where we found out that Mac was school treasurer for 3 years in a row. He's like, I kept getting reelected, I'm the best. And then, smash cut to seeing this hanging body from this character that, you know, has been in the last few episodes. So it was like, whoa. I think it was meant to be very jarring, but yeah, it just, it felt like it completely disrupted the flow and then didn't really affect anything moving forward. So for me, it felt very out of place. Grill's death, on the other hand, whoa.
How did that not happen sooner? Like, how has Grill managed to live this long? Like, someone had to have tried to kill this guy. This
guy. Such a dick.
I mean, he did have some character flaws, possibly.
I mean, in his defense, if you found out this group of people that, in your mind, you took in and have been helping out were basically responsible for you killing off your number one guy completely, like, who it turns out was innocent of the crime that you executed him for, I'd be kind of ticked, too.
I don't know if he's ticked about that. I think he just knows he can make a lot of money off of whatever's going on here. He's got a kid with powers. He's got...
That's true.
Four fugitives.
He's got a kid with powers and a person who was, who is an inhuman who had been keeping it a secret. Yeah.
So he's got a lot of money coming his way, and that's what I feel like his only motivation was. I do feel like he should have been killed off sooner just because of his character, like his attitude. I'm surprised that no other Terran just killed him throughout. It's not like he was a very charming, manipulative person like the other guy whose name I keep forgetting.
Yeah, no, he was just, yeah, he was pretty unlikable, but like, yeah, he's like, that's the way it is. Yeah. Flint took it hard, though, because he was like, oh, shoot, I killed that guy. I knew him, and he would occasionally throw me a bone every now and then. That's upsetting.
Flint kind of needs to get over that. I just feel like Flint needs to. You can like kind of control rocks now, bro. Like
I'm wondering if this is gonna come back and like how I'm wondering what the extent of his powers are. Like if he could grab a meteor that's like floating by the space station and like toss it into a spaceship,
or could he pull like Earth back together?
There, I fixed it.
I don't think that's the way Earth works, but yeah.
You gotta have like a molten core in there somewhere.
Or now that we've introduced him,
I don't know.
Are we gonna like bring him back to the present when we eventually jump back?
I'm wondering if he's gonna cease to exist if we fix this
everything.
Future.
Exactly, everything yeah. kind of fixes, and then it kind of never happens.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like these character deaths. Like somebody in the chat was asking, so if they fix it, will they all be alive? In theory, yes. Also, in theory, they may never be born because, like, these people will never necessarily be in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, their parents will not get together. Bone at the exact same time. But yeah, that it's
well,
that's
they
why
didn't
the
even have natural birth, they had like bred birth, so they were bred.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so no, that's one, a good no point. One, no so, yeah, is... in theory, all the people on this space station will cease to exist when the future is put back together, I guess, or when
so
the past
bring Flint with us.
I mean, he could probably exist out of time, right?
He still wouldn't exist. So even if you bring Flint back, he'd never be born.
Depends on which part of which theory, which time travel theory you're subscribing to.
I'm just saying.
Like, oh man, how sad would that be if they brought him back, though, and then they see him Back to the Future style disappear right in front of them? That would be sad. Because,
like, that's Back to the Future style, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the version of time travel that we've decided this is.
That's very true. It's hard to say. But yeah, so regardless of what happens to Flint in the future, he's an inhuman that's currently on our side, and Grill has been dealt with at the moment. But as we know, whenever somebody gets killed, that's usually a bad sign. Humans killing each other is one thing, but like I highly doubt the authorities are going to look kindly on that. So yeah, they might have another renewal coming up pretty soon. So one of the things we get in this episode too is, as you brought up, Fritz coming back in full force in this. He's playing the part of this crazy marauder who's super brutal, and he's I love seeing him play this character.
Is he playing?
Method acting.
You of little faith. This is who he really is. Embrace the dark side, Fritz. Here, I enjoyed the interaction between Cassius and Fitz often. Their banter back and forth actually is very Shakespearean in nature. It reminded me of King Lear.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think both it showed how evil Cassius is, but at the same time, how easy it is to see through him. Because that was basically Fitz called him out at the dinner table in front of everybody. He's like, this is the thing that makes the most sense. Anybody can see that.
Even all these, like, terrible people who God only knows what kind of, like, crimes they've committed, like, atrocities they've done. They're like, holy shit.
It just like you Fitz. See somebody like trying to quietly scooting away from Fitz, just like.
Is that why? I thought it was because he spoke out of turn with no regards to the general hierarchy of the table. This is a guy who's a stranger. He comes in and he kind of supersedes what Cassius is about to say, who's the host of the table. I didn't feel like they were shying away from the method. I felt like they just didn't like the fact that Fitz is the one who spoke up when Cassius was about to eloquently put it in his words, and Fitz kind of said it in a crude manner. Kill each other. That's what I would do. And it was just very callous.
That's true.
Cassius can be many things, but he's not a callous person. He's a very cold, calculated person. And as much as we think he's evil, he's just actually working within the maintenance of the world that he lives. So it's not like he's looking at it like this. I'm raising pets. Right? I'm breeding pets. You know how evil he is? He's actually evil the same way people would think of someone who upsettingly breeds dogs. Okay? And how they would think.
Like a puppy mill.
Exactly. Yeah. The way the rest of us would think and look at them like, wow, you're a piece of crap. But they just think, hey, these are animals and I'm breeding them to fight and the ones that can't. So, and he's not as evil as we think in the way that he actually has feelings for Sonara, something we actually kind of see in this episode, because he actually cares about Sonara and he cares about when she's fighting, like when she gets hurt. He actually cares. He actually likes Sonara.
Not enough.
I was going to say, does he though?
I mean,
like, dude, there's so many good good arguments to not like put your best fighter / your bodyguard
in
a ring with the destroyer of worlds.
I'm sorry, Quake. There was none. I disagree with that, because his brother, who that's his main mission. His priority is not his love with Sonara, and it's not anything. His priority is to one up his brother, get back in good graces with his father. So I understand that. And also, his brother said, no, I don't want her. The destroyer of worlds. I don't want Daisy just fighting some other random pet. No, I want to see what she can really do. Your best fighter is this person. It was a challenge that he had to accept. That's within the confines of their civilization, is challenges. I mean, even on Earth, when there was a system of dueling, there was no, oh, I could have got out of it. I could have been like, nah, bro, it's not that serious. No, you had to duel for your honor. And that's what we've seen constantly is Cassius's main purpose, is his own personal honor, because it was taken from him.
There's a whole list of rules to get out of a duel.
There are 10 duel commandments.
Yeah. Thank you, Meg.
Not really.
But I'm
saying, ask like, Andrew Jackson.
It seems weird that like he couldn't have just been like, well, why would I sacrifice? I'm not going to I believe that she is a great fighter, so I'm not gonna just let my best bodyguard die at the hands of this skilled fighter. I'll throw any other person in that
ring.
Yeah,
but he's saying she's the best. You gotta fight the best against the best, and that's the person that gives the most chance. And remember, he's doing this for profit gain, and if the biggest buyer who has the most of what you want comes in and requests something, you honor that request. Mm-hmm. He's selling something. He's selling a product. And so the person who's purchasing it, it's not like it's conversation, it's the customer's always right. It's like, hey, this or nothing. Well, and that was what it came down to. He doesn't have a lot of leeway and say when it comes to his brother in a hierarchy in that nature.
Well, my view of what Cassius's older brother is up to, in my opinion, it falls into one of two categories, because when Falnok is introduced, he's introduced as the guy who runs the family empire. The word empire was used, where Cassius is just watching over the wreckage of this dirt ball, by comparison. And so when his older brother comes in and is like, hey, why not have your stray, he literally calls her a stray, go in and show us what the destroyer can really do, because she's an actual Kree warrior. In my mind, that like I said, it's one of two things. One, he knows that Cassius and Sonara care about each other, and so he's doing that to actively hurt
to actively spite him.
Or two, he's doing it because she is his bodyguard and his best bodyguard at that. Because maybe it's like, hey, little brother, you're embarrassing the family. Now that you have the Destroyer of Worlds, I'm going to take the Destroyer of Worlds, kill you because you're an embarrassment, and then leave.
The stray comment was interesting. The chat was asking us if we could elaborate on that. And there's not, we don't really have much to go on from the actual show. But
kind of. We kind of have an understanding of Kree society, and not being a part of a family makes you stray. We don't know if she was orphaned, which would make her to them extremely weak, and she's not part of like a clan.
Yeah.
Then she is like a regular, like a nothing, like a peasant, and then Cassius takes her in, and so that's why.
Someone, or he finds her, maybe he even like falls for her, and like is like, I'm gonna keep you with me.
Yeah, she might not be pure Kree. Like, looking at both her and Cassius's designs, actually, like, they might not be pure Kree. Her in particular. Like, so she might be, like, a half-breed, and so was cast out because of that reason. Who knows? Yeah, like you guys said, we don't really have a ton to go off of. Or, I don't know, maybe she was a military... She did something and was discharged from the military. Or you get the feeling that every Kree that's here is here because they don't want to be. Like, they screwed up at some point to get sent here. I'm wondering maybe if, like, he got exiled here and maybe they were friends. And so she followed... Like, she came with him.
And more importantly, the most important question we need to ask ourselves and everyone at home, I'd love to hear your comments... is about Sonara's balls. How are we not going to say Sonara's balls? Like, we can't not say Sonara's balls.
I feel
balls.
Like we...
She uses her balls. She rubs her balls. She just...
I feel like we used a lot of restraint not mentioning Sonara's balls up until this point. So I feel like we did a good job. Yeah.
I mean, Sonara's balls.
We went over an hour without bringing up her balls.
Well, we don't know. Maybe they were Cassius's balls and Sonara...
Look, I don't know. By the end of it, Daisy had smashed Sonara's balls into the wall. That couldn't have been good. Nice.
Nope. So before we get to that fight, we have another matchup, which is Ben versus May. Which I feel like on any other day, even with him being able to read her mind, I feel like she could have taken him. Maybe, sure, but
that's not the point. His power is that he can read minds. I mean, if you have an advantage, that's like, oh, I think I wouldn't be able to dunk if I was that tall, if I'm not as tall as I am, but I am as tall as I am, so I do dunk. Like, it's just that it is what it is.
Yeah. Is it at all possible to beat somebody, you know, without the use of superpowers who can read your mind?
We both look at you.
Yeah. I mean, for analysis well, I mean, May, I think, showed that she could have. And I think May, in a non-injured state, would have absolutely been able to take him down. Because the thing is, like, when you're at May's, like, level of fighting, you're not thinking about what... Yeah. You're not like, well,
she's
if I go in a downward, like, arc at a 90-degree angle...
She's achieved just a like, zen-like...
It's just reacting. It's just swinging around. So he's going to see some of her moves. Like, it's not going to be an easy fight. But I think, ultimately, if it was, like... If she hadn't, like, had a busted up leg and she was, like, rested.
Hadn't been beaten up by Sonara prior to this.
Yeah, I think May would have kicked his ass.
I don't know about kicking his ass because he was also a very able and skilled fighter himself.
That's true.
Look, I could read May's mind and she would still be able to kick my ass. Like, I would be like, okay, she's about to punch me now, run. Like, that would be like, but he, like, blocked it. He fought her. And even the one where she got one hit in, but other than that, he really took her down. Because not only is he a skilled fighter, he also is able to, as a telepath, read her mind and just know her moves to begin with. And we don't know how much he can read her mind. Maybe you can read someone's mind and learn their knowledge.
Maybe.
So, I mean, that's something that does happen in telepaths quite often in the Marvel world. So why would that not be something he could do?
Yeah. Well... Can't do it anymore.
He's dead.
He's dead.
Wow. Death by balls.
To the death. They did say to the death. I'm just saying. Why do we keep forgetting to the death? and Fitz saved her. Fitz saved her. And there's something on the earth that we don't know yet. Because he is like, send her to the earth. There must be some base or something.
I bet Enoch set up the base down there. Everyone there would have died if Enoch hadn't gone down and set up some kind of refuge for them.
Yeah, he wouldn't have brought it up as like a solution. If granted, he might have just been desperate, but yeah, you get the sense that they definitely have something else planned, because otherwise, where are they going to escape to once they all get off of the colony? Where do you escape to? You go to Earth, where you know nobody's gonna come and attack you,
hopefully there's just some magical obelisk that goes the opposite direction.
Here's hoping, because yeah, right now it doesn't really sound like they have an exit strategy,
they don't.
Yeah, he just said working on it and then slept for 70 years. That's not fixing the problem.
But in episode 5, we do know they have this alien structure. No one knows where it came from. No one knows how deep it goes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Which also makes me think that Enoch might be the devil. No one knows how deep it goes.
He goes all the way down to hell.
But and he's like, oh, Ghost Rider, what up, bro? Like, okay, so that obviously is... I feel like there's like a whole underground movement of humans on Earth that have been saved, because most of the humans who were sent to Earth are the ones who are being punished for being rebellious.
And we know that somebody on Earth that isn't Fitz is sending radio signals.
Yes.
So I feel like that, yeah, that might be entirely possible, that there's a resistance on Earth. That makes sense. But yeah, so let's talk about Daisy and Sonara's fight here, because yeah,
my dream.
I was gonna say when they're both in the arena together, that would have been a dream come true for you, right? Normally,
I actually watched the whole thing, and I in my head understood that they were actually fighting over me, and I was, girl, stop. There's enough of me.
That's
to go
how
around.
You recontextualize
Please.
It.
I appreciate both of you as humans and Kree.
I love you both. There's no need to fight.
Differently. It's in a different way.
The fight starts, and I'm just like, I've had this dream.
I've had this dream. It ended very differently.
I just love strong, amazing, smart, beautiful women. Like, I love strong women. Like, I really do. And both of them are strong women, and they're both killers. Maybe I also like a little bit of crazy. Maybe. But I just like the way they handle ish. Okay,
Daisy handled Sonara's balls.
Yo, it was amazing, and she used her power to stop it and then ricochet it. And
I think we're getting a very clear
vibrate her balls.
I think we're getting a very clear look as to what Taran's fan fiction looks like.
Yeah, it was cool. I like the way the plan came together with them and Fitz and Gemma.
Yeah. Do you? Because it didn't work.
Well, it didn't, but in terms of story, I really like the way it happened and sure. what it means, like, as they're going to be pushing forward. Because Daisy, by the end of this, like, her powers are deactivated.
Yeah.
Like, her, like, the inhibitors.
What they should have thought, like, she floats up there like everyone's just going to watch. Like, I mean, let's go hit him.
I will give Cassius at least a little bit of credit to have the foresight of like let's put up a little force field here. We don't want her pulling a Katniss Everdeen on us.
Well, clearly he saw Mockingbird, the Mockingjay, and he saw that.
He saw part two, and he's like, "Yeah, no, not about that."
Oh, I should put in a force field.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Oh, that's perfect.
Well, of course, these people have powers, and he knows that, and he wants to protect it. I don't think that was the first time the force field was used. It seems like it was already installed.
Usually, if there's a precaution like that in place, it's because there was an incident at some point in time. So we can probably assume that at some point some inhuman took a pot shot at him. And so now we have a force field.
Yeah. Can we talk about how cute Fitz and Simmons are?
Absolutely.
Like, even while they're dealing with like death, like fights to the death on an alien space station, they still manage to be adorable.
Yeah. I think one of the best things about this episode is that one, Clark Gregg directed this one. This was, I don't know if this is the first time he's directed an episode, but yeah, if there's anybody who understands the you know, characters and
the dynamic between them.
And the dynamic between them, it's going to be somebody who's on set every single day. And that is something that we see here these two characters, every time they're interacting, you just see that all they want to do is run at each other and make out furiously, which we don't get until the end of the episode.
And it reminded me of what Lance said, where it's like, it's disgusting. It makes you want to throw up how much they're meant to be together. Because in the beginning, Fitz pours his heart out to Gemma, and she just can't hear.
Oh, and we know that it's happening. It's just like,
no, he's burying his soul, and she can't hear. She has no idea. He's right behind her. No. Oh man, yeah. I'm not even sure what she was doing. I think she was just like, I don't know how I would react if I couldn't hear anything. I feel like I would probably just space out too. But she's just kind of looking over stuff and like kind of spacing out a little bit. And he's just burying his soul behind her. I was waiting for the moment where the camera was going to cut to a different angle and we'd be hearing what she's hearing, just this, you know, just this monotone blank audio like cue to indicate that she can't hear anything.
And we know now for a fact that Gemma is not an inhuman and that peripheral vision is not her specialty. Like, can I just... You're like, he's right here. Like, look to your left, bro. Like, don't say, oh.
Or, like, generally, like, when you're walking around, like, or if there's somebody, like, moving behind you, you can sense
it. Yeah,
but like,
you can hear, but you can also
a lot
feel
of that
like,
is based on your ability to hear, though.
But, even if you've got, like, loud headphones on, like...
I will say one time there was one person who decided that they were going to sneak up on me at work while I was walking down the hall. And so they like were sneaking up behind me and it was just like the creepiest thing to hear footsteps behind me. And when I'd stop, they'd stop and ugh. Yeah. So
she went to human resources and Matt Lauer no longer works.
I do not blame Gemma for not turning around because she couldn't hear anything.
Who is this person? I'm just like, who are these people just stalking you? Yeah. Like, that's not, at some point, that's not funny, you know?
But yeah, just that feeling of like, there's definitely someone behind me. Yeah. Yeah, but when she does turn around, I feel like Fitz played it so cool. Again, having Fritz there and method acting as Fritz, I feel like he turned it around very well. Because was able to hear for the rest of the episode.
Twisted the stuff. He's like, your slaves need to go. Whoa, Fritz, back down. Whoa. But also, back owning down. This role.
Fritz, just be this person.
She for sale? That'd be great. Like, just wondering.
Love him. I love him.
But then, yeah, we get this great moment where they're both walking down the hallway and you know they just want to run towards each other and embrace and no, they get blocked. So upsetting. But it makes their reunion at the end all the more satisfying, which, by the way, freaking Gemma, for a hot second, I thought she killed Cassius. I totally thought...
Did she not?
She didn't. He's still alive. She cut his throat, but I think she missed a vital portion of it because he was still up and around. So, yeah, I totally thought she killed Cassius.
I left the episode thinking he was dead.
Dead. Yeah, he's dead.
I think he's still alive.
Go.
Huh.
Yeah. But, so, yeah, she slices his throat and then jumps down, and they have their big romantic kiss, and... Yay, guys, they're going to get married. Probably.
They both survive. This is the worst time to make a statement like that about the future.
Will you spend the rest of your life with me? Yes, however long that is.
12 minutes.
For however long we can run until we get to the spaceship.
Oh, boy.
I did like that he was like, you know, I proposed first, right? Like, I just want to make that very clear.
I did it first. Like, it's not, I don't care. It's not a macho thing. Just, I did it first.
I did it first. Well, I feel like it was important for him to, like, lay that out because... The last time, like, before everything went to hell with the framework and everything like that, they were moving in together, and he seemed really apprehensive, oddly enough. Like, I don't know, like, living together, getting married, whoa, Gemma, pump the brakes a little bit. which is completely, like, had we known what was going to happen, it's just like, yes, let's get married, like, now. So, I don't know. I think that
would have been different. They would have got married and then everything would have happened as they are just married. Like, nothing has changed. Like, they wouldn't have had a ceremony. I mean, I'm just saying, like, there would have been no difference had they gotten married in any of the episodes leading up till now.
That's true.
If everything just plays out the same, they'd just be a married couple who...
I do like that part of Fitz's proposal that went unheard was that the universe doesn't want us to be together, and yet we're still together. That's how strong our love is. I defy you, stars.
Yeah, the funny thing about that, Fitz, is the universe has a way of hearing these kind of things. I mean, like, hold my beer.
I would just not do that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Just be like, the universe... But it's just testing us. It wants us to be together, right? Universal.
Totally.
Elements.
The only other thing I really want to bring up from this episode is the introduction to Falnok that we get in this episode, Cassius's older brother. I was pleased as punch when he made his introduction because the actor... And this might not mean anything to you guys because I was on the turn after show here. But the actor who's playing Falnok is the actor Samuel Roken, who played Simcoe, basically one of the main bad guys in that show. So he's really good at playing villains.
You're right. It meant nothing to me. So, no, but you did say something interesting, which you're like, he's extremely taller than Dominic.
He's so much taller than Dominic.
Which makes me think. The angle of the why is Dominic, why did they choose someone who's not as tall as the other Kree appear to be, clearly. And I can't wait to hear more about, there has to be some explanation at some point.
I think the reason for the, because if you look at the way they shoot them together, they definitely address the height discrepancy by making them a lot closer in height than they really are. And I think that's because we're going to be seeing the power dynamic struggle between the two of them.
Sure, but their hair color is different.
That's very true.
No, it is. It's like the orange hair versus the black hair. And I was like, hey, that's something.
But if they shot Samuel as tall as he actually is...
Sure.
The power dynamic would be very shifted. They would have to shoot everything from Cassius's point of view as looking up at him. And that's not what they were going for this time around. They put them on much closer of it, where there's still that power dynamic where Falnok has a lot more power than Cassius, but it's not as uneven as it would be.
And they never talk about their mother. They talk about the father,
yeah,
and not the mother, so maybe they don't have the same mother. And
which might explain why Cassius was exiled.
Cassius is the, you know, the side chick, right? And then Falnok, what's his name?
Falnok, I believe, is how you pronounce it.
Falnok's mom is the proper
That wife. Might be why he's overseeing the Empire.
Hmm. Maybe. Or Cassius, like, really messed something up.
Well, like, no, he somehow did something, which I don't think he did something that messed something up. I think in some manner he showed empathy or compassion for something or someone he should not have.
Maybe this is going to be more like Last Airbender than we think. So, like the Fire Lord, like the we have a Zuko situation where it's like, whoa, guys, don't do that. That, like, people are going to die in that scenario. Son, you have displeased me. I exile you to Earth.
It could be something as simple as like, him showing compassion for humans, and then he's like, okay, well,
the father being like, you love them so much,
be one of them. And that's where he gets this hatred of humans and tries to use them to
where
profit.
But still has that attraction to them as well.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting thought. Like, and it's good character motivation too, where compassion was what put him in this scenario. Yeah. So, okay, if I'm going to get back on top, then I need to never show compassion
ever again.
I need to rule through fear with an iron fist.
He's even afraid to show compassion to Sonara, who he clearly has some type of feelings for.
Which, my older brother says you have to fight to the death, and we really want to sell the Destroyer of Worlds, so you're absolutely going to die in this match. Make it look cool, sweetie. Pretty please. That'd be great.
Bye.
Man. I feel like that just about does it. Do we have any other thoughts on both of these episodes?
Well, should we talk predictions?
I think that these episodes... Okay, I keep watching the show, and I have no idea what's going on as I'm watching the show each and every time. So if episode
100 keeps you on your toes,
doesn't do anything... I'm not just going to write the producers. we will be fighting
to the death. On that note,
I just have so many questions. Like, what's and it's entertaining. I have to say, I do like the season. I know you don't like it as much, but it's very entertaining to me.
Well, I feel like something that's indicative is at one point you turned to me during the second episode and you said, "Is this still Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D?"
No, I was like, "What show is this?"
It's different, but that doesn't necessarily mean bad.
Yeah.
So we shall see. On that note, let's go ahead and dive into some predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So, according to the preview, it looks like the escape plan goes great and everything is fine forever. Right?
Explosions and some kinds of problems.
Yeah, no. Ship everything's great. Gemma and Fitz get married and they live happily ever after.
And Cassius actually is the one who marries them. That's actually, it's
he
really
officiates
weird.
The wedding.
He's the officiant. And we were like, wow, really? Didn't think he had it in him. Those beautiful words.
I think they're going to wind up stealing like one of the other bidders' ships.
The brother, Falknock's ship.
Oh, that'd be even better. They steal a Kree ship and just, like, pilot it the hell out of there. I'll bet Enoch can fly it. I mean, I think they'll get out of there. I'm really hoping that this is the episode where we find a way back to our own time.
You're over this.
I'm just ready. Like, I still, again, like, I don't see the consequences of this whole scenario if we're just going to go back to our time and fix it all. So I'm ready to get to where there will be lasting consequences.
Okay. Well, I guess who the bigger villain on this panel is. Sheesh. Lasting consequence. I think that they get one of the mining ships and that, of all people, Flint pilots it, because they even make mention of how Grill was teaching him how to fly or something. Yeah. One of them was like teaching him how to fly. So his piloting comes in handy. And
he'll just clear the path. He'll do Moses it. Just
sure.
Whoosh. Meteor free.
And then also, I really want to know what happens with Enoch and where Enoch is going, because I think that was the biggest loose end that they left.
Yeah.
Because
still could be Satan. We
don't
know.
Dressed up like a Kree, went down to a level. We don't know where he's going.
It is cool thinking that his weird skin suit is, like, customizable. Like, he could just change the color palette on it.
Yeah. That's it.
What he says is fine. I thought he was wearing, like, Kree's like, who are you?
A Kree.
Just a Kree.
As like I have always been.
Brother.
Like, that's not weird to you, dude? Like, that's like if I walked up, like, who are you? A human.
Definitely a human. Yeah.
Whatever you think I am. I'm human. I just want to let you know.
There's no bigger tell than being like you. I am the same species as you can clearly see. What else would I be?
That was even the question. So it was excellent. So I think the Enoch storyline is way bigger than we all realize, and that's going to be the focus. So when you're asking what these consequences are, Enoch is the consequence. So this is all setting something up for Enoch. And they're like, oh, look at this hand. Look at this hand. Look at, uh-oh, it's in this one. Sanara's ball. Sorry. That was the last time. That was the last time, because she's now deceased.
Now, here's the question. Well, she's not deceased. She's just stunned.
Yes! More Sanara's balls!
But Cassius threw her to the wayside and basically gave her a death sentence when he sentenced her to fight.
Yeah, Sonara's going to be pissed.
I don't know. I don't think she is. I think she understands. It's kind of like, remember when they played the game and the Life Owed game, and everyone just understood that's just how it is. And that's something that I feel like happens outside of cultures, especially oppressed cultures. Oppressed cultures have this understanding that this is how it is. And
I don't
know. Deal with it.
I think she's ticked. I don't think she's going to stand for it anymore.
You think she's going to betray Cassius?
I think she's either going to murder Cassius and or Falnok.
Yeah.
I think she's going to take them down.
I think she takes out Falnok, but not Cassius. I think they have a love there.
That can never be beaten.
She's going to put Cassius' balls right through his own heart.
I think that's the best prediction. I think that wins. Okay, I think that just about does it for this week. Folks, thank you guys so much for tuning in and being patient while we figured out studio scheduling for the holiday. Zach, where can people go if they want to find you?
You guys can find me all over the internet at ThatZachWilson. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. I've got some exciting stuff coming up soon that I will announce and post when I can.
Taron?
Thank you for watching to the death. I am Taron, literally at I am Taron, all across the social media atmosphere. Please find me not on planet Earth as it's being destroyed, and I appreciate you for watching.
Taron's out of here.
The second we cut to black, we are all fighting to the death. Be sure to, again, follow Jesse at JessKlein1 on Twitter and Instagram.
He's gone. So.
send him some get well soon.
Yeah, please send him
a little under the weather.
Your well wishes, absolutely. And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. Bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I do lots of things. Follow me on Twitter to keep up with all of that. Thank you guys again so much for watching. We will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
It's lit.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.